Yeah, it's Black Friday morning. Like, this is kind of crazy because like Black Friday morning is in the U.S. at least is like you wake up really early to go shopping. It's the day after Thanksgiving, and you want to get those, you know, crazy deals. And I've worked like one Black Friday, maybe two retail days where, you know, you'd like wake up at like midnight and go to work after Thanksgiving and, you know, like work the crazy crowds. And that is not fun. That is not something that like I want to do again.
Did you work Black Friday at the Apple Store? Was that before?
So, yeah, which is like a non-event. It's like, you know, you come in like an hour early or so, and then people come by and shop, but it's not a very big deal.
Are you telling me that Apple doesn't have good Black Friday deals?
Right. When I worked at Black Friday at Sears, like that was, you know, it's like,
yeah, that'd be manic.
Yeah, not that they had good deals, but they had deals at least, and that was quite crazy. But today, like we're kind of up in the wee hours of the morning, like as if we were Black Friday shopping, just because like the schedule of recording around the holiday. So here we are. I think this is honestly our earliest hour of recording yet. So
it's episode 200. It's all new.
It's all new. But we got a few things to discuss this week. So tell me first about Apple's new holiday ad. Summarize that for me.
Yeah, so this came out early in the week. Obviously, every year they do a cute little advert for Christmas and the holiday season. This one is Share Your Gifts, and it's like a fully animated thing. They did that like Frankenstein Christmas one before, didn't they? Which is kind of similar vein. This is a girl who's making something on her laptop, but she's worried about it. She doesn't know if it's good, so she doesn't share it with anyone. And then her like dog accidentally makes it blow out the window, and then it flies everywhere, and then people in the street pick it up. They think it's great, and then she's all happy, and they all like talk about it. That's the ad that is cutely animated across what, like two, almost 3 minutes basically.
Yeah.
And it ends with Share Your Gifts, Apple. Now, they also did on their YouTube channel, they showed like the behind the scenes of how they made it, which was kind of cool. And they had like the song that goes through is commissioned especially by this recording artist who uses her iPhone and a laptop, and so they have a little like vignette on them making the song, and then they have one on the color artist, and then they have one on like the editor of the thing. And what's what's kind of cool is that the editing one, they show the person using an iMac, but it's not even like a recent model. It's the, when they're back to the before the 5mm curved at the edges,
yeah,
thing, like it's the old
ones,
thick
like,
one.
Like
yeah.
Well or so.
Which is cool, I think, that Apple can like show, especially in their narratives of, you know, devices lasting longer, the environmental side. It's cool for them to actually have like marketing, because this is marketing, right? Ultimately, that is actually showing like truly old products. Like that is at least, you know, 7 years old. That iMac style.
Yeah, there's another video like in the whole series that shows an artist doing work on a MacBook Pro with Touch Bar, and I was curious like how the Touch Bar is used in that, and from what I can tell, it's like QuickTime is being used to screen record, which shows up in like part of the video, like you know, the screen that's being used as video, not just like video of the person using the computer, and from what I see, it looks like QuickTime has like taken over the Touch Bar for screen recording, and like all you have is like the big stop recording button and like the time indicator.
Yep.
So it's like quite raw in that regard.
Yeah, it wasn't really, because I looked as well. I was like, oh, they're gonna, you know, do some editing on the bar. But I do think it was pretty genuine that they were just doing their job and they were just recording it. And obviously, then they have the you know, like the mock interview in between where they've obviously rehearsed the script and stuff. But what was kind of funny is that this is 1 week after everyone's, you know, iPad creativity, and they showcased Macs and iPhones, but there was no iPad like anywhere. And they also have this main behind the scenes of the actual advert, making the advert, and what you find out in there is that they were using obviously computer graphics to do the characters, but all the background scenes are actually made, like the paper houses and stuff are made, and they shot that and then superimposed the CGI like characters over the top of it.
Yeah, I love that. Like the ads themselves are great for what they are, like commercials to run on TV. But the behind the scenes things are like kind of like the ads for people like me and you who like, you know, who get the ads, but then like it's the stuff that's more interesting behind it that really appeals to us. And yeah. You know, it's like the same thing with that HomePod ad where the room shifts around. It's like, you know, the ad, take it or leave it, this is kind of how I felt. Like, it just didn't strike me. But the behind the scenes was quite impressive. And it's kind of the same way with the elemental watch faces on WatchOS 5, like where they have fire and water and they use like actual fire.
Practical effects to make it.
Exactly. It's like to make that, you know, when you'd never have guessed, you just assume, you know, in this era that everything is computer generated. It's quite impressive. And it's almost,
yeah, this is like Apple's new gimmick to make it look like visual effects, but really they've done loads of it. And I don't know. They say in the making of video that it would actually take them more time to remake everything in CGI than to make the set. That is what they say. I'm not sure if that... I'm not a visual effects artist, but I'm not sure if that's really true, because if you actually look at the final cut of the 2.5 minute ad, like, most of the background sequences are just blurred out because it's, you know, it's like doing fake bokeh to focus on the characters. So you can't really see the background sets in almost anywhere anyway. So I'm not sure if they did it because they... I think they like doing it because it's cool and it's like all different, if you know what I mean. And the HomePod ad was definitely a better execution of that with the way the room was moving and stuff. Like, and that was a really cool, you know, like reveal when it turned out to be them actually moving proper sets around. Yeah, I know you said you weren't like overwhelmed by the advert. I kind of agree. Like, it was fine, but it felt long to me, and it wasn't as good as some of the ones they've previously done, I don't think. Like, Misunderstood is the one everyone quotes.
Yeah,
as being
say, yeah,
the best one ever.
Yeah, where the kid's like always on his phone, and the family, he doesn't, they don't feel like he's involved in the family or like, you know, participating. And it turns out the whole time that he was on his phone, he was actually like recording video to make a video to share at Christmas. It's so clever. Yeah.
And I guess I kind of prefer those ones, even though Misunderstood is not my personal favorite. The ones with like actual people in them doing stuff, I kind of just attached to better. Like, they've also had like the Christmas ads in the past with Stevie Wonder playing the piano, and I didn't really like that one. That was boring as well, because just singing a song.
The thing about it to me is like, I think you can do like two different kind of holiday ads, and one involves the products more than the other. And the ones that don't involve the products as much, to me, like they carry a message, and it's like Apple's holiday ad, but it's not like an Apple ad for the holidays, you know, if you can make a difference there. And the ones that use products more, like, you would think it would be the other way around, but I kind of prefer the ones that are like more product heavy, because it's like, oh, this is like an Apple ad, and it's for the holidays. And the ones lately are like, you know, I guess like big picture, like maybe it's better, but because it doesn't catch your attention as immediately as like they're selling you something. And it's like a nice warm message for the holidays. Share your gifts. But I tend to like feel better about the ones that are like, here's a cool thing you can do with Apple products for the holidays. And like, this had a little bit of that, you know. I mean, with the MacBook being used a little bit, but
It was almost, she could have just been drawing on the table and it would have been the same difference.
Like, yeah, I'm actually like kind of really bad at like watching movies with some deep meaning that is not like spelled out for me, and taking the message away from it. And this kind of felt like that way for me. Like, I needed someone to explain it more for me than not. And
you watched obviously the YouTube version, which is full length.
Yeah. I do see commercials like a lot of times, like at the gym or like when I visit family, but not just like in my like regular at home watching video. But you've seen it on TV, right?
Yeah. Last night it was actually aired on British TV as a like 30-40 second cut, and I'd obviously already watched the YouTube version, so I knew what to expect, but I would struggle, I think, to get the message off the very shortened version that I saw on TV. Like, it was a bit befuddling to me. It's still cutesy, right? Of a young woman making something on a laptop and then running outside with the dog and then everyone smiling at it, and then it just says Apple at the end and that's it. But the whole, oh, she's made something and she doesn't want to share it with people didn't really come across to me in that cut.
Maybe that version is more my speed. Like the clip version. It's like,
oh, yeah, it's just like cutesy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tend towards the more cliche, because I like the balance of, yes, it's an Apple out of Apple products, but they're also doing something like not so blunt about it, right? Like, yeah. And I still love like the old Siri ads they used to do, where it was like Siri Father Christmas, and then you saw in his like reminders list he had 5 billion appointments for every, you know, house in the on the world.
Yeah,
like, that one like, is the one that the sticks in my mind the most.
Yeah, it's like Santa Claus is almost like the Rock ad with Siri they had a few like years ago or like recently. Yeah. But it's Santa Claus. It's like, but I guess those have been done. It's like, you know, how many of those can you do? So
I also think Apple's general trend in all ads, not just like the holiday stuff, is more towards the deep, you know, deeper message things. Because yeah. I kind of miss the old like, there's an app for that iPhone ad, or those original iPad ads, which are just like an iPad on a white background, and they just say iPad is all these different adjectives and just show a load of apps. Like, mm-hmm. They've kind of moved away from that collectively, not just in the holidays, but the holidays it's even more exaggerated now.
Yeah, like they're more like fun ads, or like the ones where you unlock everything with your face, like in the world, and that kind of thing. Which like they have, you know, it's different than like the older ads used to be. But yeah, the new holiday ad, and I mean, I was the holiday ad came out. I was like, oh, that's nice. It's like that time of year again. And then the behind the scenes thing came, and I was like, oh, I was more impressed by that. Like just like. From my perspective, like enjoyed watching it the most, and like even that was like on a not on the thick iMac, but like on the silver iMac. It wasn't an iMac Pro, and they had like a gigantic display, behind it for like, you know, extending like what you're working on.
The lack of any iPad on anything did make me laugh in the context of all the iPad, you know, real work baloney that's been going on the last couple of months.
And also Apple had this mysterious but curious announcement of a mark your calendars 4-day shopping event, and before yesterday as Australia turned into Friday, we didn't know what to expect from it, except that it would probably be a little bit disappointing if you're like looking for a major deal. In years past, Apple would do things like give you a gift card when you buy certain Apple products. Before that, you know, they've never had like gigantic sales like other retailers do on Black Friday.
This year they did actually seem to hype it up a bit though. Like,
yeah,
the web page went up on Monday. There was like a little video on it. They asked you to add it to your calendar.
And it's 4 days.
I even saw like AdSense ads on other websites like promoting it. And maybe they're going to do something different. No.
Yeah, and we had somebody tip saying like there's a lot of AirPods in stock, which is probably just like cramming up for the holidays. But this is like my best guess was like maybe they're going to do something with accessories, like a something like discount on this if you buy that, you know, or something like that. Like something
they're never going to. They're too. Their brand is too strong for them to actually discount their actual products on Apple.
They're going to sell products anyway.
Yeah, and they do discount stuff through like resellers and things. You can find cheap iPads in quite a lot of like Best Buy and stuff at the moment.
Oh, yeah,
but
totally.
The Apple official brand is almost never, even you go on their like refurbished reconditioned section and all the prices on there are still more expensive than what you can buy like new ones from other places. But the Apple brand is too strong to do it on their own website. I was because they hyped it up. I was like, oh, maybe they're going to do like, if you buy a new iPhone XR, you get AirPods and iPads combined for like $100 less than if you'd bought them separately. You know, like some kind of bundle like that, because it doesn't devalue the individual products really. It's just, you know, buying more. And unfortunately, what we ended up getting was what we get every year, except this time it stretches over 4 days from Black Friday to Cyber Monday rather than just Black Friday itself, which is, you know, pitifully small gift cards when you buy select items.
Yeah, not the newest stuff, but it's like it's certainly Apple stuff, but it's like not the newest stuff, and it's credit for the Apple Store, not even like a discount really.
Yeah, if you have to buy an iPhone 8 or an iPhone 7, and you can get a $50 gift card.
Ooh, yeah.
there's no promotion whatsoever for their newest models like the 10R or the 10S. a 10.5-inch iPad Pro, you can get a $100 gift card. The other iPads, including the hot seller iPad Mini 4, you can get up to a $100 gift card. Not sure what that means.
Get you a backup
I think it depends on storage. Max, you get a $200 gift card. And then an Apple Watch Series 3, you can get a $50 gift card. Mm-hmm. Or you can get headphones, Beats headphones, that are like half the price of those products and still get a $50 gift card. And then there's also the HomePod for the first time. It's the first holiday season of the HomePod. Or the Apple TV, you can get $50, $25 gift cards. So at most, you're getting $200 on like the most expensive Macs, including Macs like the Mac Pro, which are going to be discontinued within months. So it is definitely not the best deal by any stretch.
Like, take the HomePod, for example. Like, what is that? Is that a $50 gift card for the HomePod?
Yeah.
So you can spend $50 more at Apple. You know, it's like if you're buying anyway, then it's a nice little perk for the next 4 days. But like the big thing for the HomePod this year was like Best Buy had it for $250, which I think is under the refurbished price from Apple. So yep. Brand new, you could get a cheaper HomePod than you could if you bought a refurbished model from Apple.
Yeah, and obviously you can see 9to5 Toys for Black Friday coverage and Cyber Monday coverage and stuff.
They've got all the crazy good deals, so you don't have to go out and look around.
I do think the Apple holiday lineup as a whole is actually very strong this year.
Oh my gosh, it really is, yes.
But the Black Friday deals are like, you know, they're all the old stuff, so it's like, who cares? Yeah.
It was like, I just think, which, you know, if like you're gifting something like I've seen people already like buying like older iPads or a HomePod for people for gifts so far, like not the new iPad Pro, like not
and the 329 iPad is included, which is a very popular Christmas item. So that's probably like the best one on the list.
Yeah, it's a really good iPad for its price. So. This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Zugu Case. And together, we're giving 9to5 Mac Happy Hour listeners the chance to win Apple's brand new 12.9-inch iPad Pro. Zugu Case makes Amazon's highest-rated iPad case for previous models. And now, the company is launching a brand new version for Apple's new iPad Pro called the Muse Case. Available for both the 11-inch and 12.9-inch models, the new Muse case is a thin yet super protective case that also includes a built-in magnetic stand and even more improvements. The really great thing about the new Muse case is that it actually allows Apple Pencil charging without having to cut a big hole in the case that exposes the iPad. Not only does this look better visually, but it can also prevent scratching the area around where the new magnetic Apple Pencil connects to the iPad Pro. So check out the giveaway entry on 9to5mac.com to enter our 12.9-inch 2018 iPad Pro giveaway, and check out the new Muse case from Zugu Case to support the show. Our thanks to Zugu Case for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. There was kind of a Thanksgiving Day mix-up that affected iPhones and specifically Siri yesterday, and naturally I was away for the holiday, but tell me what happened on Thanksgiving Day for Siri.
Yeah, this is a bit of an awkward blunder. Because Siri sources a lot of its information from Wikipedia, and Wikipedia is for the most part freely editable by anyone, and then they rely on other people to correct it if stuff happens. The Donald Trump, if you asked Siri who is Donald Trump, who is obviously the US president, you would get a very unsavory image show up on the screen, not a picture of Donald Trump.
You would get the human anatomy that you would want to see.
Yeah, I think you can probably guess what. And if you can look at our post, and I heavily blurred it out, that was not the funnest experience I've ever had in Pixelmator, because obviously journalistic integrity, I had to check it on my own phone, and then I had to screenshot it, and then it showed up in like a photo library, and then I had to edit it on Pixelmator on the Mac. I was like, oh great, so I blurred it out as quick as I could. Yep. But it's fine. The thing here though is that yes, it's funny at some level, right, but it's also bad because like you can't have you know, celebrity information like that show pictures like that on Apple devices. Like, this is the same company that, like, censors carpool karaoke for, like, swear words. Like, you, and they have such a big line against, like, pornography and, you know, stuff that should, it just shouldn't happen, right? Regardless of who it is. You should never be able to ask Siri that kind of stuff, and it show that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it shows the you know, like, the risk of leaning on Wikipedia, which is editable, for, you know, like, what Siri gives you, like, what an Apple product gives you, and it's risky. It's like the internet is what it is. Like, it can change, but you that's a pretty good risk. Like Wikipedia has been able to be edited for a long time, and, like, I'm pretty sure it's way more stringent now than it used to be. Like, in like high school, when we'd go to like the computer lab to write about a topic, I would often, as a prankster, go to Wikipedia, where I knew everyone was about to go for a certain topic, and, like, change it so everyone would see it, and it'd be a big ha-ha. You know, it would change back within, like, moments, because, like, that's what Wikipedia would do. But I was kind of surprised that you could take a high-profile page like this and change it, and that there's not, like, some kind of, like, you know, computer system running that's like, oh, that's human anatomy. We're not going to have that as the photo, like, as the profile photo, you know, for this person. Like, I would think that would be able to be, like, detected automatically anyway.
Yeah, if not a Wikipedia's level, but, like, Apple's level. Because,
sure, yeah,
you know, Apple ultimately has a responsibility for what they're showing. And this wasn't just Siri on the iPhone. It was also, if you typed Donald Trump into Safari on the Mac, it would come up. You know, they do the auto suggestions in the it would show up there. And it's like, you know, right in your face, even if you're just being an innocent person, you know, searching for it. And it wasn't just the Trump pages. Also, if you, like, asked Siri about Thanksgiving, these Wikipedia vandals had done it on, like, several key pages, basically.
Right.
And the Wikipedia pages got corrected within, like, 30 seconds, but unfortunately Siri had cached the images, so they didn't disappear for a long time. And ultimately, Apple kind of stepped in after it kind of got publicized by us and a few other sites, and they reverted to, like, just web listings for a while before they went back to the knowledge article with, like, Donald Trump's face and the, you know, the metadata stuff.
Right.
But I actually got a statement from Wikipedia in light of this article, and the people that did it seem to be planning it for a while, because to edit the Trump page, you have to have, like, 500 contributions beforehand and stuff. Like, you have to be, like, an active contributor. And these accounts had been doing perfectly normal edits for months, and then today they, you know, did the vandalism. And I think two of them had been compromised by somebody else, like, someone had stolen their account information, and one of them was just on their own. Obviously, Wikipedia's, like, locked them out now and stuff, and they said that the Trump page has been locked down for all edits apart from admins until the 20, you know, some date in the future, just for security on stuff like this, while they kind of reevaluate what's going on. So, yeah, it was definitely a concerted effort. But on the Apple side, it's like, maybe they shouldn't rely on Wikipedia for sourcing images of famous people anymore. Like, they might want to license, like, a stock image library of something to, you know, stop this from happening.
Yeah, it's I imagine, like, between Apple and Wikipedia, there's an arrangement there. But it reminds me of, I forget who it was. Like, it was something to do with Google, though, I think, like, at some point, where someone fell back to Wikipedia for results, and Wikipedia wasn't aware that was going to happen, and they were like, you know, huh, you know, we didn't know about that, and, like, they weren't very happy with that. So
yeah, that was one of the Wikipedia people complaining that basically Google scrapes all their information, then puts it on their web pages without attribution,
right?
Because it's not just Siri, like Alexa and Google Assistant all use Wikipedia to source a lot of their information, and even when you just do a Google search for something. Often, you know, in that table that it shows you on the right?
Yep.
Usually that table is just straight copied out of the Wikipedia page, and a lot of the time they don't even have a Wikipedia credit on there, like a link to it. So, I think now all these big companies pay some sort of fee for the licensing stuff. But at the end of the day, the content is just, you know, most pages are editable by anyone. And if it had been on a page that, you know, wasn't as high profile as Donald Trump, you know, those mistakes can show up for a long time. Like, if the pictures were there for a while, and inside the Siri UI, you don't have any sort of reporting screen or anything. Like, if you're a parent and you see that, that's got to be, you know, a pretty bad reaction.
Yeah, what you got to do is start a blog and write a story about it and have it go viral.
Yeah. And Apple obviously responded pretty quickly once it had blown up. But I do think that this issue will cause them to do some sort of reevaluating on their policy there. Because whether it's doing some machine learning thing to find images like this and stop them from showing up inside Siri, maybe for like the top 10,000 celebrities that people ask Siri to see, Apple like sets the images themselves. Because then you cut out like a whole swath of problems. Like if you just put pictures up for all the presidents of the United States, you stop a massive vector of vandalism, right? Like it's not, or make it so that if Siri detects a change to the image, it pings like the Apple Siri team moderators, like the content team, to double check it before it actually gets published straight through. Versus this, which seems to be whatever the Wikipedia page will show, Siri will show, and then cache for, you know, an hour. So there's probably a better way for them to go about this than just relying, you know, point blank on what Wikipedia tells you is the truth.
Yeah, can you imagine like Tim Cook's reaction yesterday?
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm sure. Look, I don't think anyone inside Apple was happy that it happened. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and it was like you said, it was pretty short. Like by the time that I saw our story, because of Thanksgiving, I wasn't like watching the news fly by. It was too late to like try it out, luckily, but like it was getting passed around, people at the dinner where I was, and everyone was like whispering to their phones, "Who is Donald Trump?" And it's like, oh, it's too late, but like, you know, thank goodness. So it was fixed pretty quickly, but the classic lesson, never to discuss politics on Thanksgiving, even if it's with Siri, because then that's what you get served up, I guess.
Yeah, and some people were having a go at me for like even posting the story, like my mentions weren't great yesterday, but I do think like there is a genuine reason to it, right? Like this is an attack vector essentially for spreading, whether it's, you know, illicit pictures, false information, all of this stuff, it funnels through channels that, you know, Apple condones.
Like, yeah, there was a mapping service that I don't think it was Google Maps. I think it was another mapping service, but people were able to edit that.
It was OpenStreetMaps, yeah.
OpenStreetMaps, yeah. And that's the same problem. Is like if you rely on that kind of thing, like then the change that gets made, you know, for bad reasons on that service, like if Apple is relying on that, then it's going to show up in their app too.
And they used to. iPhoto, they used to use OpenStreetMap.
Yep, yep.
So they don't anymore, obviously, use Apple Maps. But a few years ago, they used OpenStreetMap in iPhoto and stuff. So it was definitely a thing. And Wikipedia is their current main vector, but they're not the only one. Like, there's plenty of services they rely on for this kind of stuff, and they all share the same problems.
Yep, yep. All right. Before Thanksgiving, before we went away for a day for the holiday, there was a sort of Apple TV rumor that kind of said that Apple was considering the dongle form for the Apple TV at some point. So you covered the story. What did we learn from this?
Yeah, so this is a report from The Information, who has a pretty good record on Apple stuff, though not perfect. They said that they were going to open up NFC for iOS 12, and they didn't. So there's one recent data point where they got it wrong. And they didn't say that this is going to happen necessarily. They said they had considered it. And obviously right now, the Apple TV is expensive. Like, there's no way to hide it. Like the fourth generation Apple TV is still $150, and then they brought in the 4K Apple TV at $179 and $199 if you get the 64GB model. If you compare this to other streaming boxes are way cheaper. And if you compare this to like the stick dongle kind of things, which just plug straight back into the TV, then the price difference is even bigger. Like, you can get right now on Amazon their Fire Stick, which is not as capable as the Apple TV in terms of, you know, what apps you could theoretically run on it, and the games aren't as good, but Netflix, you know, Amazon Prime, Google Play, all those video services, they'll all be there. And that Fire Stick costs $30 at the moment, and the Chromecast, you can get the 4K Chromecast for like $70. And just to put this into perspective, the Apple TV's Siri remote alone is $60 purchase. So you can get like the entire stick. You can get two Amazon sticks for the price of one remote on the Apple TV.
Yeah.
So
the price
differential is kind of wild at the moment.
If you get the loop to add onto the Apple TV or the Siri remote for like gaming and not to fling it out of your hand, then it matches the price of the Chromecast Ultra, which is crazy. Like, the Chromecast Ultra is pretty. I've not used one, but just like on paper, the fact that it's 4K, like if that's all you care about is like video, like streaming video, and you want it to be 4K, then that's a pretty good comparison. I'm not sure how, you know, all the other stuff like Dolby Vision and I'm sure there's like Dolby Atmos, like all that works. And the app situations, like you're not going to be doing gaming on that, but
most people don't do it on the Apple TV.
Yeah, that's part of the thing is like the Apple TV is way more capable for what, because it's like a mini iOS device, but it's like the Mac Mini of like iOS devices. It's always plugged in. It's got a crazy processor, like what is it, like an A10X now?
Yeah.
So it's pretty impressive as a processor that doesn't have to do battery things. And you know, in my usage, it's like mostly video watching from streaming video services and not anything to do with apps like games and or any other kind of app. So like if Apple were to make this kind of product, you just plug it in and then you can stream video to that or AirPlay to it, then that's, you know, depending on what they would do, it could be pretty interesting. I think it's clearly something that people would prefer if it could come down in price compared to like the powerhouse of an Apple TV 4K today.
And we've talked about before how the AirPort Express, when it existed, was A, outdated and B, expensive, but they didn't do like an AirPlay, they didn't do like a video version of that for the modern time. And these sticks can serve that same purpose. You could plug them in the back of the TV as like an input. You don't have them, you know, an extra box. It could even be headless. Like you just control it with your phone maybe, or you don't necessarily even need a remote. Like the remote could be optional, and you could use it as an AirPlay target, and you could use it to access the streaming apps. Like what if this dongle didn't have the whole like TVOS interface? It was just the TV app, right? And mm-hmm. you could access the content providers inside it and just watch that. And then it also acts as the AirPlay receiver. Because the kind of motivation that the information gives here is that Apple was looking for more ways to spread devices that it can show its upcoming original content TV service on.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone believes at the moment that it will only be on Apple, you know, like iPhones, Macs, iPads. It doesn't seem at the moment that anyone's saying it's going to come to Android like Apple Music does, how they have an Android app. And if that's the case, Apple obviously wants to encourage people to buy the subscription service, and to buy the subscription service, you need more devices to be sold. So if they had like a $60 dongle, then they would make up, you know, the money long term on people buying the $10 a month Apple TV subscription.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing, like to sell the hardware so that you can sell the service, because it's been like Netflix's big thing is that they don't care about the hardware. Like their business is selling you a subscription service to video content, and it's a tough sell. Like if you maybe want to watch these videos, then you have to buy this special hardware. You know, if you already have an Apple TV or if you have an iPhone, iPad, like Mac, I imagine it'll work with iTunes on Windows maybe, but it's way easier to just do what every other video service does and make a client. Like I don't think there's anything special about that. Like with so many services that Apple does, like iMessage, there is some like tie-in to the devices that kind of makes it feel like it doesn't belong on Android. But like for a video service, it's like, you know, pick your user interface and stream the videos to it. And I don't think you've got to restrict that to devices. So like it's like two separate things. It's like they could have their video service on other hardware, so that it's a healthy business anyway. And they could also do this like Chromecast style dongle. Just it's like the purposes of the first one is like sell the service, and the second one is to sell like the AirPlay experience, and you know, like there's still a business of selling movies and TV shows on iTunes, and to have a cheaper alternative to the $150 Apple TV. It's like, but in reality, they could probably sell that Apple TV, the non 4K version, for much less.
Oh, of course they could, yeah.
Than 150 and still be okay.
I mean, we've gone from the Apple TV 3, which was $99 and then $69. So we're still looking at like twice the price of that at the moment for the entry level Apple TV from 2015. So, yeah.
But just product wise, like there's something kind of nice and modern about like the box being a stick that you plug into an HDMI port, and like that's mm-hmm. the power. You know, it can be the power, and it can be like the whole thing versus a box that you plug in with an HDMI cable that isn't included, and then it has to have a power supply, And then it's also a physical like box sitting on your entertainment center. And
you need a remote that you have to charge every couple of months. And
Yeah,
like, notwithstanding any Apple TV video subscription service, an AirPlay 2 video receiver would be a great product on its own, and they could sell that for, you know, $60 probably and be perfectly fine. Like, that's how much a lot of their dongles cost anyway. Like,
yeah.
If they just had a video dongle for that price, it'd almost be considered well-priced in the Apple Store.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a big ask for a family to not only have an Apple TV in the main room, but also then also buy Apple TVs for every other room that's got televisions in it. Like,
yeah.
Because it is expensive, and like, I only have two of them, and you know, we're like in the ecosystem, really. Like, I would prefer to buy a little dongle just to watch, because what we realistically watch on there is BBC iPlayer and Plex. Like, that is 99.99% of what people do on there. They play Mr. Jump, which is just like a 2D side-scrolling game every now and again. But if that wasn't there, they'd just play it on their phone or their iPad. It wouldn't matter. So a dongle would be a great option. And obviously they killed the Airport Express, so you can't even do, like, they could do the same dongle that could do video or audio. It could just have two jacks on the back of it. Like, if they do this, it shows that, you know, how much they actually care about the services business, that they would change their hardware model so substantially to support it in that way, because it would mean making the entry level Apple TV like half the price at least. And you'd essentially be doing Apple TV Express. That's a cool name, Apple TV Express. Just to make people get onto this subscription thing. The other part of the information article is that they say that the Apple original content on the Apple service will be free to device owners. And you'll only pay for if you subscribe to like HBO stuff inside the Apple TV service.
Mm-hmm.
Which we kind of heard a flitter of before in that CNBC report that was weirdly sourced a few months ago. This one was a lot less vague, and it was a lot more definitive. I struggle to see them saying all our own stuff is so good that we're giving away for free. Like, why would you spend billions of dollars making this great original content just to give it away for no money? I think giving away for nothing at the start is perfectly fine, like a 1-year trial essentially, to get people on board and get people hooked. But long term, I don't think they would do that. Especially, it kind of goes against the whole idea of selling a cheap dongle to make you buy a subscription service if they're going to give away, you know, their like 10 flagship shows for free anyway.
Apple cares about subscriptions like so much now that it would be really hard to see them investing all this money in a free service if you happen to own a device. Like, they don't have a problem selling devices. The problem is like making recurring revenue from the device sales. Like, if you buy an iPhone and keep it for 3 or 4 years, like, you know, it's not as valuable to Apple as if you buy one every year, of course. And so like to augment that, you need to sell add-on services, you know, services with the device. And so it would be hard to imagine Apple giving away indefinitely this video service that could be a revenue stream, even if it's like cheap, you know, it's like $8 a month compared to other services, like some revenue. This is a company that makes you purchase more than 5 gigabytes of iCloud storage, no matter how many devices you own. Like, it's hard to imagine that these reports are not just, you know, incorrect or getting something wrong about it. You know, that it's free at the start, but then it's going to have a cost, you know, after that. But
I can't. But by the way, it's a complete sidetrack. I can't believe we're going through another year of 5 gigabyte iCloud. Like, you got $1,800 iPads with 1 terabyte internal storage, and then you set your iPad up on Christmas Day, and then it immediately tells you ran out of storage if you don't have iCloud already. Like, oh, it's so bad.
Yep.
So bad. I think this would be a reasonable compromise if they could do like the TV, music, and a decent amount of storage for one subscription price. Like, you'd still be recurring revenue, but it'd be like $20 a month, and you're essentially getting three things rather than like, you know, $10 for this, $10 for this, $5 for this. Like, there is definitely a problem of subscription fatigue, because this is only counting Apple's own subscriptions, not all the other subscriptions that you have to pay Apple to third party companies. You know, if you're buying Netflix through Apple and stuff as well, and obviously Apple gets a nice little chunk off the top of that. But if they could do like iCloud, TV, and music combined for $20 a month or something, I think that'd be reasonably popular. Like, because the problem they have with music is they don't really have much leniency to make it cheaper if they wanted to. Because
what's the lowest cost? Like $5 for students?
Well, in the US, yes. You can go to like India and stuff, and they have like $1 a month subscriptions, but also their library is completely different and a lot less available. So it's not really a fair comparison.
Right.
But for the US market, the lowest anyone will offer you really on that kind of service, whether it's Apple, Google, or anybody, is $4.99 for students, yeah. And obviously yeah, family
Spotify
planners.
Will do like an extended 99-cent deal for like
trial, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a trial. It's like they make you pay, but it's like it's practically a trial for 99 cents, you know, for 3 months or so, like each month.
Yeah, obviously it doesn't last forever. That's the thing. Like right. Apple gives you 3 months for $0 if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's... So on the music, they have contractual problems with how much they can change the price, and the answer is not very much. So music is probably not changed from $9.99 for like the standard plan for a long, long time, and unless the whole industry changes, Apple is not going to change there. With original content TV shows, Apple has all the rights; they can pick whatever price they want. Same with iCloud storage, really. Like, yes, iCloud storage isn't free for them to do, but when you're at Apple scale, you can charge $2, $5, or $10, right? Like the cost per user is not close to what they're charging. It's not uncompetitive. Like that's the thing about Apple's paid iCloud tiers, is that they're basically identical to what Google will charge you for the same amount of storage. The only difference is that the free plan, Google will, you know, rake you over through advertising and data privacy problems, if you want to put it that way, but they will give you significantly better free offering of a storage in just raw gigabytes, and then also they can upload all your photos unlimited for a lower resolution, but still a good resolution. It's not like 1 megapixel. It's still very good images, and they can do that all for free, whereas Apple will offer you 5 gig for free and nothing more. So that is where the disjoint comes in. So some collective bringing together of all their subscription stuff, even if they wanted to throw in apps, like I still think it'd be a cool idea if like every month you get a new app, and I'm sure developers would get on that train because they get a cut of the overall subscription amount. Like some bringing together of all four of those like different avenues, I think something they should consider.
9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Ops Genie, now from Atlassian. Downtime is awful. You've lived through it, I've lived through it, and it's no fun. It doesn't matter if it's at home or at work or wherever you experience downtime. When a system you rely on goes down, it immediately throws a wrench in every part of your life. When it's worse is when you're the one responsible for fixing it, and you don't have a plan to manage your way through it. That's what Ops Genie is for. Ops Genie gives your team the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues. Are any bad issues ever planned for? I think we all know how that goes. Ops Genie helps you notify the right people through a smart combination of scheduling and escalation paths that take into account things like time zones, vacations, and holidays. Obviously, you want the right person notified immediately, but if that person is not available, you want the next person notified without having to wait, only to realize that the first call person isn't actually on call. This is where Ops Genie's smart magic comes into play. It knows because you've told it previously, back when times were calmer and you could think through it all. Ops Genie keeps track of all that for you, and when problems inevitably occur, Ops Genie is there to help. Also, now that Ops Genie is part of Atlassian, it opens to all kinds of integrations with things like Jira, Amazon CloudWatch, Datadog, New Relic, and more. That's what Atlassian is all about. They integrate well with their own solutions, but they also integrate with other popular solutions too. Check it out, opsgenie.com, to sign up for a free company account for up to 5 users. No credit card required, no time restrictions. This is a fully free account for you to actually use, not just try. That's opsgenie.com. Never miss a critical alert again with Ops Genie. Our thanks to Ops Genie by Atlassian for sponsoring the show. All right, Mayo. as always, there are reports that Apple is no longer selling any iPhones anymore and that no one wants to buy an iPhone. And this time, the reports are not going to be pushed back by device unit sales because Apple's not going to report how many iPhones they sold in the future. We'll have to rely on analysts to come up with some numbers to this. But what's the latest on the storyline of no one wants to buy a new iPhone anymore?
Yeah. Obviously, device sales have been 0% growth for a fair few quarters now, and it doesn't look like that's going to change for a while. These latest round of reports keep saying that 10S and 10R have been soft demand to weak demand in certain regions, but it doesn't seem like overall iPhone sales are going down. It just seems like Apple's selling more and more of like the iPhone 8 last year generation compared to, you know, the new flagships. Obviously, the new flagships are more expensive, so they can sell less of them and still make the same amount of money or even more money. And it seems like the XS Max is doing very well, considering like ASP on that SKU would be like $1,300. But the more mid-range configurations of like the XR don't seem to be very compelling to the market compared to buying, you know, like a $599 iPhone 8 that Apple obviously likes to sell. And if you go for Black Friday, they will give you a deal on the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 7, and they won't give you a deal on the XR. Specifically, there was a interesting Wall Street Journal report that said that the iPhone XR is doing so poorly in Japan that they're actually going to price cut it from as early as next week, which is, you know, a warning sign.
Well, like
Japan is a very
officially drop the price of the phone. Like if it were in the US, it's $750. So like in theory, it would be like $700 or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was specifically through carriers. So like Apple was going to charge the carriers less money for every unit, so the carriers can do it cheaper. I think if you went to like Apple.com, they'd still show the same price. But if you're buying through the carriers, which is effectively a price cut, right? It's just keep saving face at the same time. And Japan is a very iOS dominated market. But they seem to be liking Touch ID and home buttons enough to just carry on buying the cheaper iPhone 8 series rather than upgrading to the XR.
Interesting.
And we'll obviously see if that happens, because unlike these reports that are just like, you know, XR sales are down, this one specifically said this is going to happen as soon as next week. Right. So we will be able to find out in a few days whether, you know, this is true. And I don't think anyone can say that the price going down is particularly good news in terms of, you know, performance in that region. And this isn't completely unprecedented. Apple has done this kind of thing before, especially like they quote even like the 6S generation, they did heavier carry discounts when in specific markets. Mm-hmm. The other interesting part of this story is that because Apple is pulling back on some 10S and 10R, on 10S, they're actually going to have to restart iPhone 10 production, because they have a contract with Samsung that says they have to buy X million OLED panels. And at the moment, they're not going to be able to satisfy that contract just on 10S sales for the current quarters. And the journal said that this was due in... That was part of the reason they're bringing back the iPhone 10. They didn't say what the other reasons were. But to make up the difference, they're going to apparently restart manufacturing lines and sell the iPhone 10 again in certain markets, in certain places, probably through resellers rather than Apple.com, and that will allow them to not buy other screens and not use them.
Right, yeah. That's really interesting, because I mean, like, from Apple's perspective, the iPhone 10 went away. Like they looked at the market and they said like the 10S, the 10R, there's no space for the 10 anymore. And even so, like, we've seen some inventory that's like lingering around for the 10 sell for like $899, and that's pretty compelling. I mean, $100 more gets you the XS, but it's like for the 10, like if you're trying to like save every bit you can but still have a premium phone, if you can come across an iPhone 10 for $900, it's pretty compelling.
And some carrier stores have been still selling their iPhone 10 stock for the last couple of months anyway, that they just have left over for $800.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably already not helping sell, like, the XS models. Like, by itself, then just having the leftover stock when you go into a carrier store, you're selling the inventory, but you're not selling the newest models. So it's kind of just doing that, but actually Apple will be restocking the phone themselves to these people to do the same difference. I don't think I think it's more problematic that they need to do, like, supply chain gymnastics to meet minimum order contracts for the OLED stuff, because Apple tends not to be in those problems than it is for them to resell the iPhone X, because that only comes up as a problem because that's what Apple said was going to happen. Like, there's a perfectly reasonable timeline where in September they just sold the iPhone X for $100 cheaper anyway and just carried on.
Yeah.
Like, if they hadn't announced that they weren't going to sell it anymore, then it wouldn't be a story in the first... Do you know what I mean? Like, they're not going out of their way.
The interesting thing is that it's kind of a miscalculation on Apple's part.
Yeah, like, they're not doing something so dramatic. They're just kind of carrying on selling the model from the year before. But because this obviously wasn't their original plan, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. The not meeting the targets may be a sign of a problem with their operations department miscalculating demand and stuff. Because it's not just about customers buying it, it's about what Apple, you know, orders months in advance. So maybe there's something they need to recalibrate. And maybe there are other factors as well, because, you know, this is from one Wall Street Journal report, ultimately, right. And we'll never know on this one what the real cause is. But we'll obviously be able to see if iPhone 10 start popping up again at different places.
You know, if they need to sell more OLED, you know, buy more OLED panels from Samsung, they could put some of those OLED panels on the 10R. The 10's like reaching 10R prices at that point. It's like, maybe.
Yeah, so... In summary, I believe that the iPhone 8 is squeezing out the 10R sales. And I think that's perfectly legitimate because, obviously, you know, price talks. But the 10R is a better phone. Like, anyone listening to the podcast, if you want a new phone, you should buy a 10R. It's so much better than the iPhone 8 series. But
it's,
you can
better,
see in the wider market...
and it will age better, you know, in a few years, indeed.
Yeah, exactly. But you can see in the wider market why the iPhone 8 would stand up. Just, it's cheaper and it's familiar. Like... There's definitely I could pay extra money and learn this, you know, new gesture system and, I don't know about... Especially if you never use the iPhone X, you'll be more worried about, like, the face recognition stuff. And people... Unfortunately, there are enough people now who are, like, on Android who have used face recognition on... Like, the earlier face recognition on other models of Android phones that aren't as good as what Face ID offers on the iPhone X because of it uses different sensors. But, you know, normal people don't know that. They just see that and they go, I prefer fingerprint to face detection. And that's it. And that's the end of the story. Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of, like, conflating different things here. We will get some picture of this when Apple reports their results. And obviously we've already seen them report guidance of, like, 89 to 94 billion. Which is obviously a ridiculous amount of money and would still be a record for them, but was lower than, you know, what some people thought it was going to be. But the fact that we're not getting unit sale reports anymore does kind of make it harder to, you know, fully rebut this stuff. So that's kind of where we're standing on here. Like, I think it's important to address it on the thing, but it's not like we're going to bring up, you know, every single supply chain report for the next, you know, 200 episodes. It just seemed like an... Especially the iPhone 10 coming back into stuff like that is particularly interesting, just as a thing. Like,
honestly, any of the reports that say iPhones are not selling as much as they used to, like, it's like, if you can't verify, then it's just honestly boring.
Or you can look at the facts, and it's like, this quarter, they had 0% growth, right? So you don't have to, like, guess. You can just look at the quarters that have gone by and see that the growth rate of iPhone shipments has definitely fallen off. Like, there's no debate about that.
Yeah, but the change that Apple makes, and because of those reasons, like if the 10R has a price cut to carriers, and if the iPhone 10 pops back up in markets again, then that is interesting to think about. Last thing I want to mention this week is a new use case on the iPad Pro that I've come across. It's nothing incredible, but it's just that for our workflow, a lot of it involves having the web, Slack, and streaming Twitter. So these days we have to use TweetDeck to have streaming Twitter, which is unfortunate, but Apple Twitter took away their API for third-party apps, and so that's the world we live in now. But like moving between those three apps is pretty important, and so on the iPad it's quite tricky with just two side-by-side apps and like one app that can slide over and float above, especially when like you kind of need to use the web now to get Twitter to stream. And so you can split out Safari into multiple tabs, but like that is like one Safari full screen is where you can split that, right? And then like the other app you bring over a second app, and I think the tabs collapse back into like one Safari window. So it would be tricky to do like Tweetbot, the CMS, WordPress and Safari and Slack as like you know on one screen. But something I tried this week is to use Chrome as the slide over app that floats above Safari and Slack, and put TweetDeck just like the website and Chrome, like go to the website. And Twitter is like so good as a skinny, like tall column app that even like with the window Chrome around, like the Chrome user interface around it's not that bad. And the slide over experience is that, you know, you have your two apps or even just one app, and you pull the app up and it doesn't like take over part of the screen. It just floats above the other apps, and you can push it from left to right or out of view. Like you can push it all the way to the right and it hides. And it's consistent between apps. Like if you change from Safari and Slack to Mail full screen, you can still swipe over and have, you know, TweetDeck in Chrome as your slide over app persistent, which is really nice.
Yeah, and that's the critical difference between like slide over and the split view, because the splits stay together.
Yeah, they're so paired, right?
You don't really want like a Twitter app in the split, because you generally want the other app to change a lot.
Exactly.
But it will move with Twitter, whereas if you put it in the slide over one, it will follow you around the system, although obviously it hides itself and stuff. But
yeah, you don't get it on the home screen, which is unfortunate. Like, so it's like on the Mac, if you open Launchpad, everything is covered up by like the app launcher. You know, same thing on iPad, which like that's where Launchpad is inspired from. But it's quite interesting to me. Like it changes how I can like maneuver around while working on the iPad, because one of the problems is like without windowing, I can't persistently have a view of like what's happening in breaking news right now. But if I can change between apps and have this floating window that I can. It's kind of in the way in some cases, but I can slide, I can move it around, or I can push it out of view for a moment. And it's quite nice to do that. It's like too bad there's not like Tweetbot with a streaming API anymore, like because of Twitter's changes, or that Twitter hasn't brought streaming to their iOS app. That would be perfectly fine. But in the meantime, like, you know, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, or if ever, using TweetDeck. And like I guess like specifically I'm using like the skinniest setting for like what a column in TweetDeck is, but it's quite nice. And TweetDeck has like a side to side scrolling for different columns, and that's not quite something you could actually do in like one of the if you were using like a Twitter client app before, but you just swipe left to right, and then like there's your activity, there's your DMs, there's other lists that you've made, so and they all stream. So I'm not happy in the least with like the changes that Twitter's made to like the API and how it's affected Twitter apps. But in this one aspect, like it's actually a pretty good experience. So and kind of changes the way that I can work from the iPad, because I'm able to communicate in Slack over here in a skinny window, write in a full a large Safari window a story, and see like the news. Like if I'm writing a story, I can see that there's no more like that it's either changed or that there's new details to add to it, like by keeping an eye on the timeline. So with Twitter, so if that's something that you value, like passively watching Twitter like is nice in so many scenarios. Like if it's like a sporting event or just like casual, you know, it's nice to do that. And so having it in Safari is tricky for a number of reasons, but like if you have a secondary browser like Chrome, or if you can find a more minimal browser that has like less user interface around it, that's even better. And just have that like, you know, almost always be your slide over app that floats above, and you can bring it in and dismiss it as needed. And it's like all of a sudden that gesture becomes, you know, opening Twitter like above your other apps, no matter what they are. So it's quite nice.
Yeah, that does sound pretty nice. I obviously would prefer if TweetDeck was native rather than a web app. But
sure, yeah.
There you go. It's funny, with the Twitter API, even we're like 6 months on now, or every many months since they changed it, and in TweetBot, whether it's on the phone or the Mac, I still sometimes try and find like the activity tab again, just because it feels like such a natural thing for a Twitter app to have, and then it's like my brain just can't get it out of its system. Like, oh, I'll go see the activity stream. Oh, wait, no, I can't. And then I get sad again.
Yeah. That's the state of things, but that's kind of changed how I've been working around with the iPad. It's a little bit closer to like copying, you know, like, you know, doing what I can do on a MacBook, but differently. And like my main machine is the iMac that I'm working from. But like to use the, like if I want to go like make lunch, I can pretty much reproduce like the monitoring and like write up a quick story workflow on the iPad right now. It's just quite nice. So, all right, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. Hope everyone had a happy Thanksgiving, and we will be back next week. If you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com, and we are on Twitter. I'm at ApolloZach, and Benjamin, you are?
BZA Mayo.
Yeah, and see everybody next week. Bye.
Bye.